Your Steve Jones Show podcast will start shortly. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Brewers Outlet, your beverage supermarket on Reagan Street in Sunbury. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Now let's turn our attention to Carissa Thompson, Fox Sports, and also on Extra. Carissa, welcome. Great to have you with us. And give us an idea what it's like for you going from being on the sidelines for BTN to now being in the studio.
Oh, a lot. I mean, I'll say this, first of all, I miss traveling for, you know, Big Ten and for NFL doing sidelines because I love the different cities I went to. But the luxury of being in studio is I just drive down the 405 and I'm there and then I'm back home at night. But I will say this, I miss the, you know, the atmosphere of being at, well, Penn State in your situation or, you know, going to a game at Camp Randall and all that kind of stuff. The thing about the studio that I do appreciate, though, is being in a host position is driving the conversation and being able to host now a show. And to your point, it is different than doing a 15-second hit, you know, a couple of times throughout the game. So there's positives and negatives to both positions.
Yeah, and Extra does a lot that's live. I mean, so that's something that your past experience allows you to feed off, correct?
Oh, definitely. And all of the different interviews that we do for Extra, you know, on the red carpet, that kind of stuff, where the public say you got two, you know, two quick questions. It's like, well, that seems like a lifetime compared to trying to growl or fire to answer one question at halftime. So, yeah, there's similarities in both of the positions, for sure.
What does it take, Carissa, for you to change gears from Extra to then get into the NFL work on Fox?
I think it's just a lot more personal questions in entertainment. You know, in athletics, it's based on performance on the field and very rarely, you know, barring any headlines of what's going on in the Tom Brady world of being with Giselle or whatever. But it's like, for the most part, our sports stuff is based on performance, whereas entertainment, it's hypothesizing even right now with this Brad and Angelina thing of like what's going on in someone's personal life. So that's taken a little bit of an adjustment when you go into an interview and you know you have to ask them about their divorce or, you know, if they don't want to talk, like Brian Gosling doesn't like talking about his, you know, baby, so he just had a kid, and so you have to ask about that. So it's just sort of straddling, like, trying to be respectful to their personal life, but knowing that you have a responsibility to your employer to try to get something about it.
Exactly. There's been one change for you, big, that's on Fox NFL Kickoff, and that's Charles Tillman now entering into the mix with Randy Moss exiting. What's he been able to add to the table, and for you, how much fun has it been dealing with all the personalities at that table?
Oh, well, last year I had good old Randy Moss, who is always entertaining. So he gave me an indoctrination into personalities at the table real quick. But Charles has been wonderful. I mean, he's, you know, an all-pro in the league for 13 years, did it at the highest level. And I think that it was evident from the first interview we had week one with Josh Norman and, of course, the trip right together in Carolina. But players, I love what I do, and I'm very fortunate to do what I do, but the problem is, having never played, there is a difference of when you're asking questions to a player and then a player is asking questions and being, you know, interviewed by another player. There's a different level of respect that exists there and the language. So when we were interviewing Josh Norman, it's very evident that Charles being so close and just, you know, removed from the game this past year. So still knowing those guys and everything like that, it's very personally, it goes a long way.
Coward, though, also has his own personality and his own style. So what did it take for you to adapt to that?
Colin and I worked together at Sports Nation at ESPN. So
yes, I remember.
I know how to work with Colin, and Colin's hysterical because you could ask Colin a question and he'll start to answer it and then he will completely deviate and all of a sudden be talking about something completely opposite. So it's just about trying to follow his train of thought, which is very erratic at times, but Colin is one of the smartest people I know, and he can literally talk about anything. So he always makes for a good conversation.
Give me the importance of your show being a little bit different than what you then lead into, which is would be the long-running pregame show with Bradshaw and Menifee and Johnson and those guys.
Yeah, they have the luxury of being together for the past 20-something years, whereas, you know, being the, I referred to as Jimmy was filling in for Dave once that this past weekend, and when Jimmy was there, I referred to him as joining a kids' table, you know, and we're very aware of the fact that we are the free pregame show, but we're just trying to do our own thing in the sense that establish our identity. This is the second year for this group to be together, and again, the departure of Brandy and Cham, so just trying to find the identity of being, you know, we're different than the next hour, but we're also the same. So like Terry wandered onto set, you know, in our show last week, and then we'll have Michael come over. So we try to bridge the gap, but I would just say we're sort of an appetizer for the main course.
And in the appetizer for the main course, how important has it been for you to deal with the issues of the day in the NFL? This, you know, this time around, it's the national anthem. Before that, there have been other issues that the NFL has had to deal with. How important has it been, not just the entertainment and the game part, but the issue part?
It's the fabric of it, right? I mean, you can't have one without the other, and you can't just talk about the positive stuff. So, like anything, whether it's entertainment or sports, you're going to address, you know, everything. So, yeah, it hasn't been an issue at all. It's just what you have to do.
Back to Extra for a moment. What is the most surprising thing you've learned about working in Hollywood?
That's a great question. The most surprising thing is the bigger the star, the nicer they are.
Interesting.
So, George Clooney's of the world, the Tom Cruise, all of the big, big stars are always the nicest. Morgan Freeman. You know, there's an element of, you know, they've been there, they've done that, they're veteran, you know, individuals that know how to play the game. And I'm not saying that the C-list aren't, but there's just a different expectation.
Interesting. Very interesting. What is the challenge that ends up being gratifying doing Extra? And what's the challenge, and then what ends up being gratifying doing NFL Kickoff?
I like your question, Tyler. The gratification and the challenge in entertainment is, and this is something I'm still working on, is, as I was alluding to earlier, is that balance of being invasive in someone's personal life, but also supplying your audience with what they want. I mean, there's a reason that tabloids still sell at the, you know, grocery store, and these and our entertainment shows, ours included, are meant to do just that, which is entertain and sort of offer a little window into the world of these celebrities that people grow to love. So I think it's finding relationships, building relationships. Kate Hudson was someone who I had loved before I entered this realm of what I now work in, and I loved her. And then now, having interviewed her a few times, she's like, "Oh my gosh, we should go home now. We should get a drink." It's like, you know, she's one of those people that makes you feel like she's your best friend. And then there's other people who don't want anything to do with that. So there's just sort of an ebb and flow. It's a different person, like anything, but it's different personalities, and also how to be respectful of their private life, but let's still find the viewer with what they want. And the challenge of sports.
Yep.
I think the challenge in sports is always, how are we doing something different? There's other pregame shows on other networks, and now there's so many different outlets or media, and social media has changed things. So what are you giving the viewer? Is it stats? Is it personalities? And I think the more that I'm in sports, the more I realize that there's so much out there in terms of information flow. I'm not going to be the first to, you know, report that Jameis Winston is 33 or 34 passing with so many yards and this and that. Like, let's report that Jameis Winston had something happen, you know, I don't know, in the locker room. So some sort of inside information that you can't just get from a Twitter feed, I think, is the challenge for me to continue to try to make it informative, but fun, too.
One final question, then I'll let you go because I know you're on a short time, and that would be as follows. I know when I broadcast a game, I talk to students all the time about you have to do so much that when you're not on the air. Vin Scully obviously is now into the final week coming up of his great career. You can tell he's a voracious reader by the stories that he tells. So to balance two shows, what kind of off-air time do you need reading and research that allows you to be as proficient as you are on the air?
I think for me it's just a gradual. So it's not going into the kitchen and making the whole meal at once. I always equate it to Thanksgiving, right? There's the preparation of a few days before you whether it's basting the turkey, or you get your stuffing ready, or you have your cranberry, your dessert, you make your pumpkin pie like a week before. So I think it's just all about timing of preparation. If I know that I have like I'm driving to Extra right now, and I have an interview later with Lucy Liu. Okay, so I'll go into work, I'll do my daily reads, and then, you know, a few hours before, do my research on her. And that's manageable. I wouldn't do my research on her yesterday because I had two interviews yesterday with two other people. So sort of day of preparation for interviews like that. And then for football, I prepare all week long while I'm at Extra. So the couple, like the hour here, the downtime there, like I have packets in front of me right now for information that I get from my researcher that are set throughout the week. And so I think that that's more of a gradual preparation, if that makes any sense.
It sure does. Carissa, thanks so much. Appreciate your time. You're doing obviously great work, and we appreciate the fact you carved out a few minutes for us.
Oh, absolutely, and thank you for the mindful questions. I appreciate that.
Carissa Thompson, Fox Sports, and also seen on Extra. Let's transition now to Bob Flounders, PennLive.com, and the Patriot News. Bob, welcome. Great to have you with us. Bob, what's been your general impression of what you've seen from the Penn State defense so far?
My take on the defense is that we still really, Steve, because of the injuries and because of some other things, we just really don't know a lot about maybe what the potential of this defense is. We haven't really seen the defense, I think, that Brent Pry drew up, and we're not going to see it. I mean, the strength, I think, at the start of the season, the strength of the team was going to be, you know, kind of founded. I think Penn State really, really liked their corners, and I think they really liked their starting linebacker group when they've been healthy. And what's happened? I mean, you know, Kabinda, Naeem, and Brandon have played probably, I don't know when exactly Jason hurt himself, but I think it might have been in the first game. They just played a couple of quarters together, and it's unfortunate. Naeem's season is done. It looks like Brandon is going to miss some time. Grant Haley got hurt, I think, early in the Pitt game. So it's really hard to look at this defense and say, well, you know, they're just not going to cut it this year, because they never really got a chance to play together. He's had to call – James Franklin and Brent have had to call on their depth, and they've been fortunate in some regards, I think, when a guy like Brandon Smith, to me, for him to be able to play, call the defense at that and really not miss much, to me, is phenomenal. I know it was the Temple offense. And the defensive front, I mean, they were trying to replace three really good players.
Right.
Kevin Givens gets knocked out by a teammate against Pitt, and that complicates things. Brian Haley, I think, is obviously a guy that they think is one of their best defensive players. When they pair him with John Reed, we haven't seen that. They're going to take their lumps when they have to reach that deep into the reserves. And, you know, it does seem, Steve, like it's going to be another one of those situations when they play Michigan. They're not going to be at 100%. And this is an offense that they're going to be facing that can do some damage. So I don't know at the end of the year if we're going to know the answer to the question that did we see this defense at its best?
Right.
I mean, I think it's great. I think it's great that Torrence Brown is starting to play better. I think it's great that Manny Bowen is starting to flash a little bit. Because I think they do need to get the way this game is going and the way that offense is scoring and the pace of the games. They need fast players. They need quick players. They need players who can turn the game in one play. That's just the way I think you play defense anymore, Steve. It's not necessarily about, you know, holding teams to 17 points or 20 points. It's about getting the turnover or the key stop, and then you let the offense kind of take it from there. I think the offense has made great strides, but I think that's where this defense needs to get. And turnovers, they need to get more turnovers, and they need to be quicker. And we'll see as the season goes on, you know, who's going to be manning the key spot, you know, down the stretch, because the Big Ten schedule is, I think, very, very difficult for Penn State this year.
In today's game, and this is a question I asked a guest earlier, but I'll dovetail it and roll it over and ask you the same question. And when Tom Bradley took the UCLA defensive coordinator job, I was talking to him on the phone, and I said to him, I'll bet Jim Moore is looking for one more stop each half.
Yeah.
In the Pac-12. Is that the state of today's game, not just Penn State, but the state of today's game? If defensive coordinators can find one extra stop per half, they've actually done a good job in today's game?
I think it is. I think about everyone last year raved about the Alabama defense, the national championship Alabama defense. And if you watch that national championship game against Clemson, they were hanging on, Steve, for dear life against that team and that mobile quarterback and the speed that Clemson had. And they needed some plays in the kicking game to win that game. As good as that defense was, as many players that they're going to send to the NFL, it's just not the game is not dictated by the defenses anymore. It's absolutely dictated by the offenses. And I think you're right. I think that is how you shape the question. You play winning defensive football now by getting the turnovers and by getting stops at the right time, getting off the field. Because you're gonna get your nose bloody. You're not the days of 23-17 games or against good teams are over. You're talking about on offense. You need to be able to score minimum, I think, into the 30s minimum.
Right.
And I think that you look at the Pitt Penn State game. I mean, that was the most points Penn State ever scored in a loss. Those 39 points in program history. And, 39 points wasn't enough against Pitt. Pitt was 6-for-6 in the red zone. They scored all touchdowns, I believe. And that's how the game is played. I mean, there's just too much speed on the field, and the offensive coordinators just have the upper hand. I don't know how you really defend a team like Ohio State anymore or a Pac-12 offense. I don't know how you do that. I watched a game, a late game, I think it was Arizona State and somebody else, and I think they got to 120 points and they did it easily. I think it was Arizona State and Texas Tech. It's almost not even like football anymore. They're playing a different game.
It's like watching a video game sometimes. Which now brings me to the Penn State offense. The low bar so far actually was the opener with Kent State, 33 points. What growth have you seen now that they have three games in with a new system for everybody across the board?
A couple things. I do believe that even though this offensive line is really, you've got two former defensive players on the offensive line. You have a guard playing center. You have a guy that a lot of people think, you know, if he was healthy, would be playing left tackle. He's on the right tackle. He's playing right tackle. You have the left tackle who really his previous experience was kind of mostly, I think, at guard or at right tackle. So, I mean, if you really think about that and the schedule that they're going to play, I do think the offensive line has gotten better. I think that, to me, when I think about the offensive play and how this team looks better, obviously Joe Moorhead and the way he calls a game is going to help things. But to me, it's the development of Trace McSorley, the fact that you can just tell that this is a kid that never thinks he's out of a game. You saw it against Pitt, but, I mean, you really saw it against Georgia, too. I think it bodes so well for Penn State moving forward if they can keep him healthy, because he does play he plays the game almost like a defensive player, and it's a compliment, but it's also a problem. I think that's great, but also Mike Gesicki emerging as a pass catcher, maybe not so much as a blocker, has been huge. And DeAndre Tompkins is a guy that I didn't have him on my radar at the start of the year. I figured if it was a receiver other than Godwin or Hamilton or Saeed, it was probably good. They were probably going to do something with Brandon Polk, or Juwan Johnson was going to step to the front.
Right.
But DeAndre has really done some nice things, and he is absolutely a threat. This is a team that, at the beginning of the year, James Franklin said it, defenses aren't scheming to stop the passing game. They're going to say to Saquon, you're going to work for those yards. You're a great back, but we're going to do everything in our power to keep you under 150 yards a game. And that's what they're doing. And you're seeing Penn State starting to take advantage of that in the passing game. And you just wonder, if everyone stays healthy, will there come a point where maybe defenses need to play the passing game a little bit more honest, and that'll give Saquon a little bit more room, and you're going to see an even more entertaining Penn State offense.
Bob, I always consider it a pleasure. Thanks so much. Appreciate the time. Look forward to seeing you out there.
Okay, Steve. Take care.
Bob Flounders, Patriot News, PennLive.com. Great to have his perspective on the show. Also, our thanks to Carissa Thompson for Fox Sports, who joined us in the opening part of this segment today. Today's show is brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury. The Beverage Supermarket imports domestics, microbrews, best selection of beer anywhere. Water, soft drinks, snacks. wine coolers. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. The bags are right there at the register. And the pickle bar is second to none. Dill's Barrels, my favorites. All at Brewer's Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Stock up for the weekend right now. Do it tonight. It's going to be a big football weekend. Eagles and Steelers. We'll talk with Tony in the next half hour about that. Penn State football tomorrow with Michigan. Shikellamy coming up tonight. You got Bucknell playing tomorrow. A lot going on. It's a big football weekend. It's the first weekend of autumn. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Key Routes 11 and 15 on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
True refreshment can come in many forms, but it can only be found in one place, the Beverage Supermarket, Brewer's Outlet in Sunbury. Along with their great selection of beer, including imports and microbrews, they have lots of water, soda, fresh roasted peanuts, and an unbelievable variety of pickles at the pickle bar. Look for great deals on wine coolers and your favorite snacks, too. Get true refreshment all in one place, the Beverage Supermarket, Brewer's Outlet in Sunbury.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Happy Brewers Outlet Day, everybody. Great to have you with us as we head into the final half hour of the show. Our thanks to Penn State men's ice hockey coach Guy Gadowski, who joined us in the opening half hour. Brendan Quinn, MLive.com, talking a lot about Jim Harbaugh in the second half hour. Last half hour, Carissa Thompson from Fox Sports and Extra, and also Bob Flounders from the Patriot News and PennLive.com. This half hour, Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Report. We'll talk about the Steelers and the Eagles in just a few minutes. Today's show is brought to you by our good friends at Brewer's Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the Beverage Supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, the best selection of beer anywhere. It's why it's one-stop shopping. If you want wine coolers, water, soda, they have all of that. And also the best in snacks. The peanuts are roasted fresh and hot every day. The bags are right there at the register as you exit. And the pickle bar, an additional feature, is second to none. Love the barrels, love the dills, as all of you know. You've heard me say it 100 times. It's all at Brewer's Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Stock up for the weekend now. It's the first week of autumn. Think of all the great beers they have, okay? Oktoberfest is coming up. And I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, K Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Autumn is a great time to buy a car. And that is the dealership to deal with. Sunbury Motors. All right. We'll get to Tony DeFazio in just a few minutes. Time now for our sports bozo of the day. And it's going to be Mariners catcher Steve Clevenger, the backup catcher. And again, what gets him into trouble is Twitter. Again, the ability to put something into black and white, 140 characters, no emotion, no, you know. It always gets people into trouble, it seems. And the Seattle Mariners were reviewing all internal options after backup catcher Steve Clevenger posted a pair of inflammatory tweets yesterday, for which he later apologized. Mariners general manager Jerry DePoto said the team was very disappointed in light of Clevenger's tweets, which referenced the recent unrest following the fatal shooting of a man by police in Charlotte, North Carolina. One tweet said in part that, quote, everyone involved should be locked behind bars like animals. While he is certainly free to express himself His tweets do not in any way represent the opinions of the Seattle Mariners, DePoto said in a statement. We strongly disagree with the language and the tone of his comments. Clevenger apologized several hours after the Mariners issued that statement, saying in a lengthy statement released through his agent that he was sickened by the idea that anyone would think of me in racist terms. Clevenger wrote, "First and foremost, I would like to apologize to the Seattle Mariners, my teammates, my family, and the fans of our great game for the distraction my tweets on my personal Twitter page caused when they went public earlier today." Clevenger's a 30-year-old journeyman catcher. He has spent time with the Orioles, his hometown team, the Cubs, and now with the Mariners. He's done so over the past six seasons. He's batted so far this year .221 with a home run, seven knocked in 68 at-bats. He said the tweets were in reaction to the news out of Charlotte, but that they were worded, and this is his wording now, they were worded beyond poorly at best, and I could see how and why someone could read into my tweets far more deeply than how I actually feel. I grew up in the streets of Baltimore, a city I love to this very day. I grew up in a very culturally diverse area of America, and I'm very proud to come from there. I'm also proud that my inner circle of friends has never been defined by race, but by the content of their character. And any former teammate and or anyone who has met me can attest to this, and I pride myself on not being a judgmental person. I ask that the public not judge me because of an ill-worded tweet. He also, in one of the tweets, mocked the Black Lives Matter campaign as well. And of course, it was all referencing to the tragic death of Keith Lamont Scott, who was killed by a police officer Tuesday in Charlotte. Of course, there have been violent protests since. All right. Turn our attention now to the link. We have a lot coming up here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. We've got Shikellamy football tonight with Williamsport. Then coming up tomorrow, Penn State football with Michigan at 3:30, 2 o'clock the airtime from Ann Arbor. We also have the Eagles on Eagle 107 with Merrill Reese. We have the Steelers on 100.9 The Valley with Bill Hillgrove, Tunch Ilkin, and Craig Woofley. We have Bucknell football and Eagle 107 tomorrow with Doug Birdsong, Kevin Hur. We have a lot going on. So let's turn our attention now to the Steelers and the Eagles. We bring in Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Report. Tony, the Steelers are 2-0 to this point, yet I don't really feel like Ben Roethlisberger has really played well to this point. Do you match that opinion, or do you have a different opinion?
Yeah, absolutely. I think he, I think perhaps the weather contributed to the ugliness of Saturday's game. Neither quarterback looked real sharp. I think a lot of balls were misfired, and I think that may have had to do with the sloppy conditions. But he didn't look great in week one either. He's still throwing a lot of interceptions. And now I'm going to say an odd thing. That's probably a good thing at this point, because this team is still scoring a lot of points. They don't have their full offensive personnel intact. These are the results we've seen to this point. And yeah, their best offensive player, arguably, can definitely get better, and I think we can probably reasonably assume that he will.
The fact that there's not a rock-solid complement on the other side of Antonio Brown, has that contributed? I mean, look, you're right. They're scoring buckets of points. But has that contributed maybe to the confidence he has in other options?
Yeah, I think that's I think that's probably fair to say. A lot of the guys that are in right now are younger guys. Eli Rogers and Sammy Coates are two young guys. Coates is a second year guy who's essentially a rookie, and Rogers is a rookie. They'll get Marcus Wheaton back, and that should help. That's a guy who, even though he and Roethlisberger don't have certainly the relationship that he had with Antonio Brown, or even with Martavis Bryant for that matter, he's a veteran of the offense, and you can probably expect those guys to be on the same page. So I think that should help. And again, he doesn't have as good a season as Jesse James is having. The confidence and the comfort level he had in Heath Miller is something that's going to take some time, certainly, to replace.
When you've watched the Eagles, what have you thought of Carson Wentz?
I haven't seen a whole heck of a lot of the Eagles. I've only seen highlights here and there, and I've certainly looked at their numbers. What he's doing to me is extremely impressive. I'm one of those old school guys, Steve, who thinks that a rookie quarterback, you have to take your time with the rookie quarterback, or you're going to get rookie quarterback results. And maybe those are coming for Carson Wentz. I don't know. But it certainly seems like they're not protecting him the way the Steelers protected Ben Roethlisberger during his rookie year. I don't know that the Eagles have the personnel or the defense maybe to protect him the way the Steelers did with Roethlisberger. So they're giving him what seems to be at least a relatively full complement of a playbook, and he's going out and executing. So I think his confidence level's probably pretty high. I've been very impressed. I did not think that he would be performing at this kind of a level. I think he's going to have a chance to have a lot more success on Sunday, because as improved as the Steelers are defensively against the run, this is still a team that, you know, that you can throw the ball against.
When I'm doing this same style of interview with someone from Philadelphia, they'll tell you, boy, this is a big game down there. Now, each week there's a step in the NFL. You only get 16 of these, so they're big.
Right.
But what is the perception of the game in Pittsburgh?
It's definitely different. You know, I think that part of that reason is because the Steelers have established themselves as a bit of a measuring stick, and Eagles are, you know, several years away from when they used to have that same designation. And I don't think Steelers fans quite understand what they may be getting when the Eagles come into town here. You know, I think last year, and this is, again, I'm saying this from a fan's perspective.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's easy for people to forget that just 2 years ago, the Eagles were a pretty good football team, or at least a pretty successful football team results-wise. Last year, because of the preseason moves, because of the circus that it kind of became under Chip Kelly, I think that's how Steelers fans are looking at this Eagles team. Like, this is still the same, you know, mess that it was when Chip Kelly left last year. So, you know, I don't think Steelers fans have a real good understanding or really any familiarity or any level of knowledge, to be honest with you, about the Philadelphia Eagles, and I think they'll be a little bit surprised, at least in my opinion, when the Eagles, and like I said, I think the Eagles are going to have a chance to put some points up next week, and I think you're going to see some Steeler fans who are going to be surprised by that.
D'Angelo Williams has obviously been rock solid the first 2 weeks, and this, you know, last year when he got off to a really good start, I had no doubt that Le'Veon Bell would just step right back in, and like, because I think Bell's a special player. Do you have more doubts today because of the durability of Bell and what Williams has done, that it's automatic that it, you know, Bell gets 75% of the carries?
You know, I probably shouldn't have any doubts, but I got to tell you, in addition to the health issues, there's a level of trust that D'Angelo Williams has earned that Le'Veon Bell has not. And not only has he not earned that level of trust, he may have squandered away some of it. Now, all that said, coaches have to win football games, and you got to put your best players on the field to do that, and we know what Le'Veon Bell is capable of physically. But again, there is a level of trust there. Coaches love veterans. They love guys that they can trust, and I think D'Angelo Williams has certainly earned the trust of not only his teammates but the coaching staff, and I think he's probably earned a different role than he had last year when Bell was healthy. What that is, you know, I honestly don't know. But I don't see any reason for coaches to rush Bell back. I would assume he'll be in very good condition. Conditioning's never been an issue with Bell. But again, I think it may be a little bit different than it was last year. How different, I honestly don't know. But I think Williams' role, I think he's earned the chance to have a bigger role.
How have you felt? What have you seen in Keith Butler calling defenses, and is it a little bit different than what we saw from him last year?
I think maybe it is a little bit different than what we saw last year. They're not blitzing anywhere near as much. I think they're a little bit concerned to leave their young secondary out on an island. They got burnt doing that a decent amount last year, and I think they're being a little more cautious with that this year. I also think he's playing into his team's strengths. They are more committed to stopping the run than they have been in quite some time, and that's going to be, you know, that's going to be their philosophy, I think. That's going to be what they're going to base this defense on going forward. One of the ways they're going to try to protect their young and not all that talented. Well, not all that, maybe there is some talent there with some of the younger guys, but it's still a secondary that has some issues. So I think they're going to try to protect that secondary by, you know, forcing teams to throw only in, you know, major situations by, you know, making them be a little bit one-dimensional. If they can't run the football, they're going to have to throw, and maybe that in its own way can protect the secondary a little bit. But I think that's what you're seeing. It's a little early at this point, but at the same time, they've played two pretty good offenses, and they've had, you know, they've only allowed 16 points per game. They've been very opportunistic. they can still be taken advantage of, but I do think you're seeing a little bit of a difference in style and maybe more importantly in philosophy from Butler.
They also have a lot more familiarity with the offenses they saw because, you know, obviously they scrimmaged Washington in the preseason all the time. That's why, like, how could you say that about Washington? They scrimmage them all the time, and, of course, they see the Bengals all the time. The Eagles aren't in that category. They don't see them, and they haven't really been. Nobody's. I mean, Doug Peterson hasn't been a play caller till the opening game of this season.
Right.
So is there an air of mystery as to, you know, what you think and what you see this time through as compared to the first 2 weeks?
Yeah, I think there definitely is. I think that's a great point that you make because, again, you know, there's no question that every NFL team spends a ton of time pre-scouting and you know, they're watching and breaking down film. And they've been, you know, they've had guys on the staff doing that since the beginning of the season, obviously. But as much as they're doing that, it's much, much different when you play a team like the Bengals twice a year, every year. And like you said, when you at least get to see a little bit of what Washington has in the playbook in the scrimmages. You know, again, I think that's a great point. You know, and as much time as you spend watching it on film, when you're not out there against it, it is a little bit different. So I do think, you know, again, with a guy like Carson Wentz, you know, there's two games of film, and sure, there's college film. That isn't much. That's not much history, and it's a guy who's probably changing and changing rapidly week to week at this point in his career.
Yeah, no question. The lightning delay at Oklahoma State, now how much did that end up affecting that game between Pitt and Oklahoma State?
It's a great point. You know, it's a great question. I think it affected, you know, when you just look at what happened when both offenses came out, nobody was able to move the football. I think it had a little bit to do with that. Obviously, Pitt's secondary has some issues, but even with those issues, they were getting stops after that delay, and it took, you know, Avante Maddox falling down on that last drive, you know, to really get any kind of a big offensive play. And it was a big one, an 86-yard one. But at the same time, both teams went through the same delay. You know, both play, had to be extremely uncomfortable. Maybe it's easier to be at home and to be in your own familiar surroundings as opposed to being in a visiting locker room. There really is no such thing as a great visiting locker room anywhere, I don't think. You know, even at these great facilities nowadays, and certainly they're not as good as the home locker room. So maybe that had a little bit of something to do with it. But at the end of the day, Steve, you know, when you let a team pass for 500 and some odd yards, it's going to be hard to win.
That's a big number. That's a big number.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's,
almost 900 the past two games. I think it's actually right at 900 the past two games.
That's a big number.
Again, that's putting a lot of pressure on your offense.
It sure does put a lot of pressure on your offense. Well, they have North Carolina this week.
Yeah, another, you know, this is really the third of their three straight big tests. And again, today, you know, it's going to be tough to win on the road, but if, you know, if you had to look at the schedule before these two road games and pick which one you wanted to win, you know, if I told you have to go 1-1, which one do you want to win? Certainly, you're going to circle the conference game.
Yeah, man, they've got, and North Carolina brings a lot of offense to the table. Again, this is when you look at games today. You know, Penn State's averaging, what, 36 points a game or something, some number, like 37 points a game. And they're ranked, like, I don't know, 40th in points.
it's insane.
I mean, I feel like we're watching arena football here at times. Have you found it to be an entertaining style of game with so many points being put up early on, or do you prefer a different kind of game?
It's funny because I would have said, you know, 1 month ago that I prefer a low-scoring game. I like to think of myself as that old-school guy, but I got to tell you, watching these last two Pitt football games, one of which they won 42-39, one they lose 45-38. I'd be lying if I didn't say both of those games were not incredibly entertaining. You know, they both came down to the last possession of the game, which obviously makes a game entertaining in and of itself. But yeah, these were very entertaining football games, and maybe I'm changing. Maybe you know, maybe I am going along with the you know, with what the young guys think. But you're right. I mean, gone are the days, and Pat Narduzzi talked about this week. You know, when he was at Miami of Ohio, his defense allowed 13 points a game, and he just shook his head and said, "Yeah, that, you know, those days are pretty much over." It's almost impossible to hold a team to a number like that. And certainly the MAC is different than playing in a in a Power Five conference. But the point was well taken. And if, you know, just like you said, if you look at all the conferences, you look at who's scoring, I think there's 10 teams or 9 teams in the ACC scoring 30 points a game. You know, that used to be a number that would win you double digit games in a season. Now there's teams that are trying to win averaging 30 points a game.
Well, interesting, because when Tom Bradley took the UCLA defensive coordinator job to work for Jim Mora, he was talking to me on the phone. And I said, look, I said, yes, your mission is this. I said, you need to get one more stop each half. If you get one more stop each half,
yep.
I said, that swings a Pac-12 game. And he understood what I was talking about. And that, in a lot of ways, for a defensive coordinator these days, if you can get that extra stop per half,
yep.
that sometimes is the moment that swings it for you.
I think that's a fantastic point. A couple of years ago, Dana Holgorsen, the West Virginia coach, said a very similar thing, talking about Big 12 football, that, you know, successful Big 12 defenses were the ones that got one or two extra stops. And, you know, if you can get a three and out, a well-timed three and out, you know, those are the kind of defensive plays and series that win games. Now, you're right. It's a completely different different animal.
The other part is a different animal. The Pirates are the only team that's picked up ground in the wild card, but with 11 games to play, they need two of the three in front of them actually to falter. That makes the formula awfully difficult. What do you think about at this stage with 11 to go?
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking about this the other day. I mean, you almost need to go 11-0, and even if you do, you know, another team can go 8-3, and you still don't get there. So, yeah, it's awfully hard. You know, realistically, if you go 9-2 down the stretch, you're playing excellent baseball.
Mm-hmm.
But you need some teams, like you said, you need a couple of those teams to falter and to lose more than they win down the stretch, and there's no way you can assume that's going to happen. You know, that said, the schedule kind of lined up for this. They really had a tough time against some of the better teams. They tripped a little bit when they had a chance to make up some ground against some losing teams. And the fact that they're winning now this late in the season, it's a positive, certainly. Don't get me wrong. I don't know that it's necessarily that surprising. I think you're going to see a team finish right around 500, which maybe is what we should have anticipated when the season started. I don't know. An interesting season, and makes for an interesting offseason moving forward. Most of the lineup's intact for next year, Steve, so it's going to be interesting to see who does what and who's able to contribute at, you know, whatever projection the Pirates think they are capable of.
Tony, always terrific. Thanks a lot for your time. Have a great weekend.
You do the same. Safe travels. Thanks, Steve.
Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Report. Thanks for joining us today's show, brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. We'll talk to you Monday on News Radio 1070 WKOK.